drop some knowledge on you about God's word and how it ascends and how it will ascend your spirit. Tune in on the AM for more. Just kidding, more podcasts. We don't do radio. All right, guys. So this is kind of a different podcast. As you've already heard, you've not heard Russ. So I'm doing one on my own this week. We're kind of coming back after a long time off. And we're trying to do a new little project. I wanted to experiment with some different styles of podcast. And fortunately, Ascending Thoughts and this podcast, The Ascending Word, allows me a little bit of creativity to really do some cool and interesting things. So this week, I'm kind of exploring some of that stuff. In this podcast, I really want to lay the groundwork for somewhere that we're going to go in the future. And I'm honestly really excited about where this podcast can go. It's going to deal with some really weird stuff, some really deep stuff, some really kind of obscure stuff. But hold on with me. In my usual fashion, we're going to break it down real simple, y'all. So don't worry about me losing you in the translation. This isn't going to be like high theological speak. It's going to be some interesting theological principles, but really it's going to be something that's like low down, cool, and approachable for the rest of us non-theological people, you know, as opposed to Russ, who's like the king of theology of the people I know that know theology, which is basically Russ. So taking some pot shots at Russ while he's not on the podcast. So today, as it's just me, you're going to have to bear with me as I work through some stuff, but I think it's going to be fun. It's a little bit different flow for me to not have somebody to reflect off of and to really have a conversation with. So this is going to be really fun. This is going to be really interesting because it's going to test the mettle of my speaking and podcasting abilities. I kind of want to take you all on a journey of where I've been in the last month. And this is going to sound like I've been on the mountaintop and I've opened my third eye to have ascended into this astral plane and projected myself a la, spoilers not included. I was about to include spoilers to a movie, which I am not going to name. But anyway, it's not like I went up on like some Himalayan mountain and have learned the art of astrally projecting myself or seeing into like the force or the future. But it's been like this time where I've really kind of really listened to a lot of podcasts. I've listened to a lot of sermons and God has really downloaded into me some interesting stuff. So I started getting into John Piper's Desiring God stuff, really mostly through his podcast and his sermons on desiring God. And as some of y'all know, that listen to the podcast a lot, we talked about some of this stuff already, very briefly and in a place where I had no clue what I was talking about. Okay. So like Russ had a lot more experience with this, so he could really take it further. But me, I thought, oh man, the phrase, God is most glorified when we're most satisfied in him. And I was like, oh man, that's like a really cool phrase, bro. And, you know, we turned it into a question on one of the podcasts. And it still is a legit question, but like now I have a little bit more, armament to come at it. I also, read some, of C.S. Lewis's Problem of Pain, which, honestly, with the stuff that I was hearing from Desiring God, mixing that with the C.S. Lewis stuff, holy cow. I mean, it all really just kind of came together to form this really interesting picture and kind of revitalized a lot of things in my mind, particularly as concerning love and really like on the character of God, because there's so much more of God that we don't understand. So both of these guys, so both John Piper and both C.S. Lewis, they kind of, they told these narratives, they wove these narratives,
to talk about Jesus in a way that made me realize that he has a love, like bottom line, he has a love for us that we can't even understand. Okay. So this love that we can't understand, we understand bit by bit. We understand it piece by piece. And each day we understand more and more of how we've sinned against God, how we're further away from God, or in some way needing to need him more. So all of that is a good place to be in. And so they both put this position in for us, set this position for us as humans, that we desperately need God. Okay. So that in Lewis's book, he paints the picture that pain reminds us of the goodness of God. Essentially, there's a way more to it than that. I really don't want to kind of gloss over what Lewis did with the problem of pain. But honestly, I think you would have a far deeper and more intimate relationship with Christ, having read that book and really kind of trudged through it. It's some really abstract stuff, but holy cow, it'll really rock your world as regarding the love of God and how he loves us. And the same thing with desiring God. Learning how to just be satisfied in him and taking more steps, and understanding that there are more steps to take with God, and learning how to be more satisfied in him. And that's really kind of what I mean with taking steps. So Piper outlines a lot of scenarios where we don't just follow God for the, you know, to check off boxes and to tick off things on our to-do list or to do for Christ list. I got to lay down these things so that God may bless me. I really want God's favor, so I got to do this. I want more money, so I got to tithe. You know, a lot of those kind of asinine things that we as Christians believe, you know, we get in dire straits and we're like, oh, I better tithe more. Hopefully God's going to give me more money. And, you know, that's a really selfish place to be. You know, you tithe because God tells you to. And second off, you are trying to become more satisfied in who God is. And so that's a wonderful place to be. And so in this process of understanding how to be more satisfied in God and understanding how much more I can learn of God, I started going on this quest. This was even before I started going on these kicks with, you know, with desiring God and the problem of pain. spoiler warning, I've not actually read the book Desiring God yet. But I have picked it up. It is in my possession, and it's actually slated for my book to read next month. So I'm super excited about it. Probably should read some history books, but oh well. I'm really on a theological kick right now, and it's been a lot of fun. But about a month ago, Russ and I, we were talking, and I was kind of in a rut with the podcast. And he was too. We were both kind of like in weird places in our lives. That, you know, he had some stuff going on in his life, that he had to get taken care of. And, I was just busy. I was just down and out busy. Okay. You know, lots of new stuff going on for me, trying to balance a lot. And I just really didn't have the creative juices to, do more than what we were doing with podcast. But I had a week to step away, probably about a month and a half, almost 2 months ago, really. And I got an idea from an old podcast. A blog that I did. I'm talking years ago, probably 5 or 6 years ago. And it was going to be a series. It was going to be wrapped up into a series called Finding God. And I had fully intended to go to a lot of different places about how we could find God in the unusual places, in the places that we least expect. It led me to a place, and this is something, you know, that I wanted to do 5 or 6 years ago, but I didn't have the ammunition to do it. And I also didn't have the grit to do it, honestly, because I didn't know where to go with it. I was afraid to write it. I didn't know what to write about. I just didn't have the gumption, you know? And I'm sure some of y'all out there get that, you know, as a creative, if you don't really have a, if you've not practiced enough in your field, it's really hard to get up the gumption alone to go and do something for no real purpose. You kind of have to have like some sort of fire behind you to really steal you into producing something creative. So that's kind of where all of this comes in. And a lot of this Finding God series, it's really based out of this chapter that I read in The Weight of Glory, again, years and years ago. You know, these are deep seeds that I planted years and years and years ago. And in The Weight of Glory, C.S. Lewis talks about this concept called transposition or transposing. Okay. Really, really weird, ethereal kind of concept. If you're reading it in C.S. Lewis's like abstract language, but it's really a simple concept that if you really kind of back up and punt and look at the word transpose, it really makes a lot of sense. And this is something that would, like, if you really wanted to break it down in like really abstract senses, you can go and read from Thomas Aquinas and Augustine about their views on transposition and transposing. So let's talk. Let's just break down the word right now. Okay. So transposing in music is taking music from one key to another key. Okay. Or we can think about it in another way. You have an back in the old days before the printing press, you had scribes that would transpose or transcribe books into other books. And this was the way that we got more books. Okay. Before the printing press, that's in the movable type. So you had to do it by hand and you had to look at the source material and then translate it into the blank pages of the thing that you were writing into. Same thing with music. So you're going from the key of B to the key of C. And you know, and this is something that the Beatles kind of, revolutionized, as far as like pop music, with having all of their, music kind of basically being accessible in the key of C or G or something. I'm not a musician, whatever. This is just some random factoid I know. So I'm fully, ready for the haters out there to be like, well, in fact, it's a C sharp, that, Paul McCartney typically wrote in because, it was more accessible to the masses. And as B flat or G, it's far more, ethereal. It's more difficult to play, and so it involves a lot more note changes and octave, the blah 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 music stuff. But that's not really my point. I'm really trying to use something else to describe another thing, which is exactly what we're getting at with transposing. So in the concept of transposing, just to break it down, let's get it to our level a little bit before we kind of get into some of the C.S. Lewis stuff and some of the Desiring God stuff and some of the other stuff that I kind of want to talk about. So when we think about God and we think about his creation, actually, let's put a pin in that. When we think about transposing, we're thinking about taking something that we can't understand. So say you can play guitar, but you can't play in the key of B. But you can play open chords, so you put it in like C or G, and then you can play it. That's exactly what transposing can do. You put it in a position where you can understand it and you can use it. So the same thing works with translation. So we can't all read Greek and Hebrew, so we have Bibles that are written, that are translated from Greek and Hebrew to English. So that is a different type of transposing. And transposition, but like all of these switches and changes are kind of elaborating the point that I want to make. So, in a more theological sense, God transposes himself into his creation. This is the point that I was getting back to, that God transposes himself into his creation. So there are little parts of him in all of creation that we can see more of him as we discover more of nature. And so this is something that Augustine and Aquinas have written about. This is something that a lot of people very deep in theology have written about. And so there's really like deep kind of analysis of transposition. And I kind of scoured a bunch of sources to see like how we can really look at transposition. And so there was one article by Ryan Dweck is on ChristianCentury.org. It was really good. Kind of gave me a good perspective of some ways to think about transposition. So he essentially says transposition, it can be seen as a way for us to interpret the word of God. Okay, so using our cultural backgrounds and all of these things so that we use that to understand the Bible and how it can be renewed today. Not that it needs to be renewed, but how we can understand it better, how we can understand some of the pieces altogether. So Abraham could not have understood in his time what he was going to do with Jesus. Okay, so this is something that in Jesus's time, with Paul, Paul can look back over the long course of history and really kind of pick out, okay, so at this point, God is meaning this about Jesus. God is meaning this about Jesus. He's drawing all of the lines pointing to Jesus from the Old Testament. And again, and this is something that not that God changes, not that God has changed anything, not that any iota of the word has changed, but the interpretation of it is changed slightly based on what we know about Christ. And Christ was not revealed to us at the beginning. Okay. Christ was not revealed to Abraham. God was revealed to Abraham. And God was revealed to Moses. Moses, in the pinnacle of his relationship with God, only got to see God in part. And that was his back as he passed by. God revealed himself in different parts of himself in language. So we don't understand God. We can't understand God as one whole piece because he's so big that we can't understand all of that together. So God is all powerful, all knowing, all encompassing all throughout time, beginning and end. He's all of these things, but we don't have a word to understand all of these concepts at once. So he breaks himself apart to be understood. So, in the church that I went to for a long time, they had the song that Jehovah Jireh, my provider. I can't remember the words, but something like that. So that was another part of God, the provider. There was a lot of other Jehovah names. I can't remember all of them right now. But grab a Pentecostal. I'm sure they can tell you. cause I'm sure those are in the hymnal somewhere. I don't know. They have them in the things of faith, the articles of faith. To be of this Pentecostal denomination, you must know all of the Jehovah names. I remembered one, Jehovah Nisi. I can't remember what that one was, but I know it's a name. So there's a fun factoid in all of this. So again, God's breaking himself apart. And so because God created the world, parts of him are going to exist all throughout the world in different ways and in different amounts. So it's up to us to find these things, not so we can glorify those things, but so we can see God through those things. And that seems like a really weird thing. So, how can we learn about God through things that aren't God? I'll explain that. We are made in the image of God, so we display some of the characters of God. So we love people right now as our human selves. Jesus said in the Word, in the Gospels, I can't remember where exactly. I'll get a scripture note somewhere and throw it in the notes. Even a bad father knows how to love their children. Okay. They can provide for their basic needs. So if we understand that kind of love, that base level of love for progeny, how much more does God love us that created us and imbued in us love? That's just one example of this higher power imbuing something into a lower creature that the lower creature can only understand in part because they can only understand what they see. And I really want to come back to that point here in a second, but I want to kind of get a little bit more into this transposing thing, because this at the root of what we're going to do with this series, it's going to kind of pave the way for what we're going to do. So this is going to be kind of heavy and light, I hope. But the rest of the episodes, are going to be really fun, down to earth, things, but I really wanted to make a pretty decently solid foundation, for why we're doing it. Back to the article by, Dweck. Yeah. Dweck. He gets to the point, he kind of explains and stuff, how unreliable it can be to just rely on our interpretation to interpret the scriptures. And I agree that that's a very tentative place to be, especially when you're talking about the word, because God's word is constant, because the word is God and the word is of God. We learned that in John 1. So he gets to the point that we can see, basically essentially makes the point that we can see where God embeds things of himself into our cultures, into our writing, and into other places that we might not be able to immediately see. But if we pay enough attention and understand the voice of God, the character of God, the image of God, and we start piecing these things together, it's like a puzzle that it starts to take more shape as we start putting puzzle pieces together. Not that God can eventually be solved and, oh, we've cracked it, ha! We know who God is. We know what he looks like. We can put an APB out for this guy. Get all the coppers on him. I don't know what that accent was, but, you know, whatever. They're putting an APB out for God. I don't think that can be, but I think the more we know about what he looks like, about who he is, his character, the things that make him tick, the more we can understand what his will is, and how we can please him more and become more satisfied in who he has called us to be. Because when we are satisfied in him, it gives him glory. And I firmly believe that. And the only way that we can become satisfied in him is to understand and know him intimately enough to be able to say, this satisfies God. This thing here satisfies God. This thing here, because I've seen it in nature, and I know this is the character of God, and I know this is a symbol, this is a part of God. I know this glorifies him. And as we put these puzzle pieces together, we might figure out that we were wrong about a thing, but we can correct it and become even more satisfied in the God that created us. And Dweck ends up ending his blog with a few things that I don't necessarily agree with, but all told, I really think he hits on some good points that, while I don't think God uses our mistakes to find him necessarily, I don't think that really advances the kingdom as much as we think. I don't disagree with that statement. I think our brokenness can help us understand where to find God. And I think that's where the problem of pain comes in. In our sufferings, we can see where God is and how he wants us to act. And again, in that same way, as we see how he wants us to act, we understand how to become satisfied in him. And when we become satisfied in him and desire to be satisfied in him and desire God, we bring glory to him. So it kind of a complicated thing at the end of that article. Read up on it if you want to. I think it was a relatively pretty good article, and kind of gives a generally a good underpinning for what we're talking about here. Now I kind of want to switch gears ever so slightly to talk a little bit about Lewis's definition of transposition. And I think this is kind of the most poignant, Because in his definition of transposition, he really gets into the nuts and bolts of how a creator cannot be wholly understood by the created, because the created is not the creator. Now, we have been made in the image of God to be able to create, but we cannot understand the depths to which he created us. We can barely understand ourselves, and I don't even think we can understand ourselves fully, because we did not create ourselves. There are things in the human body that are going to remain a mystery. There are things in the human mind that will remain elusive to us because we did not create ourselves. So we can't even understand the rest of humanity, much less the one that made humanity. That is why we will always have questions to answer in humanity. So Lewis sets up this example that the artist can understand the art, but the art cannot understand the artist. The creator can understand the created, but the created cannot understand the creator. And a really funny example I like to do with this kind of thing is there's a Futurama episode where Fry and Leela and the gang all get taken into this two-dimensional realm where the two-dimensional creatures can't imagine a third dimension. So if you're tracking with me, a two-dimensional figure is, you know, a length and height and width or whatever. And it's just not depth. So there's just two axes. There's an X and a Y, no Z. Three-dimensional, you have X, Y, and a Z. So height, length, and depth. Okay. Lack of a better term. So the two-dimensional people can't fathom an existence of more than two dimensions. Similarly, the three-dimensional creatures, the Fry and Leela people in Futurama, can't understand a fourth dimension, which is time. And it's really kind of a funny experience. When they're in the 2D place, Leela tries to eat, or Fry tries to eat an apple. He can't eat it because it's two-dimensional and it doesn't digest. And it's really kind of funny because their bowels have been made into two-dimensional things, and they are made into the dimension that they're in. Which is not a correlation with God himself. When he comes to us, he does not become us and limited by us. But he also is us. So very complicated thing that I don't think I have the gunpowder to take a hold of, because Jesus was both God and man. And I'm not ready for that discussion yet without Russ. So we'll hold off on that one momentarily. But God is above us. So he operates in a dimension that we can't even understand. And when he visits with us and he imbues things with his presence and he imbues things with his characteristics, he still retains all of those things. It's just, we can't understand the depth of those things because we are only allowed to, we only have the faculties to understand so much of him. Okay, there's things that are going to constantly be outside of our grasp when it comes to him. But we can see clues of him in all of the things around us. So I've kind of held to this opinion, and I could very well be wrong, but it has helped me in understanding how the world is, how it is, and helped me move to a place that I can understand more of God through the things that confuse me in this world. I've held the belief for a long time that God has created this world to have smaller truths sort of reflect him in things that are ultimately untrue, but have pieces that are true that point to him and not to the truth that people in fact think would be a truth, but in fact points to the truth, which is Jesus. And so to kind of culminate this series, I really want to take everyone on an adventure of finding God in these places that honestly, we wouldn't think of ever finding him. I want to take experiences into other people's lives that have lived vastly different lives, have different perspectives than me, and have seen God move and have seen God in and seen God's imprint on, the various facets of their life. Lewis talks about this in his book, Weight of Glory, that if you play golf for the glory of God, because God is in it. Not because God loves golf, but because God is in us. So if we do art, God is in that art if we allow him to be in that art. And because we are created by him and we are then creating, we are placing part of an imprint of God. And through that expression, through that time of expressing art, through that time of enjoying nature with all of its resplendent beauty and the leaves on the tree and the inner workings of trees and plants and ground and soil and earth and rock, we can understand more of how God works with the intricacies of the human body, how nerves and cells are firing at this very moment to help me speak and make my voice very plain and audible, and to be able to communicate words. All of this is a very fascinating thing that I don't even know if we can understand fully, but we can understand parts of that and how that can point to God. So the point of this whole podcast series is to really look at things that we might not see as even having anything to do with God, and understanding how those things have the innate qualities, have innate qualities within them that point us directly to him. And I've always been a fan of redeeming things that we see as secular or worldly or not enjoyable and bring them back to the glory of God. So this is going to be a series that we take the fun things that we think that we do and think they're guilty pleasures, but we might see that we actually find a little bit of God and we become satisfied in God through those things, as long as we're finding God in those things. So I hope you all join me for the next few weeks and months of going on this trip, going on this journey, of really weaving the tapestry of some of these stories that we can tell about finding God in really odd ways. So join me in the series of Finding God. If you've enjoyed this podcast and you want to come back for more, I highly suggest that you follow us on our website, which is ascendingthoughtsblog.wordpress.com. You can always follow this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you can get us a podcast, you can find us. You can find our fellow podcasters, the Minamines, at all the same places, plus SoundCloud. You can check out our show notes. They're attached to the podcast in iTunes if you want to see some of the research that I've done for any of the podcasts. If you want to come back for more, you know, always hit us up on our website or Facebook or Twitter or any of those things. We are on Twitter at @ascend_thoughts. You can send us an email at ascendingthoughts1@gmail.com. You can also send us video questions if you'd like to see a video, and have a good idea for a vlog type thing or whatever creative outlet that you would like to pursue in a video format. Hit us up at ascendingthoughtsvideo@gmail.com. Love to hear your thoughts there. Anything else you'd like to say, just hit us up. And as we say here, the ascending word, have you heard?